Hey friends, welcome to Two Pixels Off. My name is Brad Hussey with my friend Mike Janda. Really excited for today's episode. Before we jump in, I want to ask you to leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. That really helps us out, get into new ears and be exposed to more and more of our friends like you tuning in to Two Pixels Off.
Welcome to Two Pixels Off, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs.
And also a special shout out to our friends at Wix Studio. They allow us to do conversations like this and to bring such value to you in these episodes. So special shout out to Wix Studio. I was actually just building, redesigning my site for one of my businesses. And I always love having a new opportunity to use and stretch my abilities in Wix Studio. And I'm always pleased when I get the opportunity to get in there and start building something. It's so much easier to build sites, to add the features that you need. And it's genuinely something that's like a joy for me to use. So I just wanted to mention that part. I don't know, Mike, have you built anything recently in Studio?
Yeah, I play around with it. I don't do client work anymore, so I don't use it as much as you do. But I play around with it for sure. I'm always impressed with the ability to customize it as much as you want or templatize it as much as you want. You can pull in pre-built modules and things and skin them with your design, but you can also go in deep and use custom code wherever you want to really make things unique. I love that about that platform. Like it's so user-friendly for the newbie, but it's also super capable for the more advanced person that wants to dig in there and tweak stuff.
100%. Actually, I was just thinking here, how do I tie that little intro in to today's topic, which is actually a little bit of a somber one, I think. And so I kind of realized a lot of my, and today's topic is about burnout and avoiding, you know, burnout in your business. I think a tool like Wix Studio would have saved me a lot of stress in the past when I was, you know, pushing pixels and coding and like neck deep in layers and layers of code and doing things that I just didn't quite know how to do. And I think that would have actually helped me avoid a lot of stress and potential burnout. But today's episode is about burnout and business. So I'm curious, Mike, what your experience is with that. And maybe if you can give us a few tips to kind of structure this little conversation we have about this today.
Yeah. My experience with burnout is like, how many times has this freaking happened in my life? Honestly, building an agency during that era, it was a lot of burnout there, but I was so busy that I didn't let myself behave burned out. I just kept just grinding through it. My left eye used to blow up and it would be like a blood vessel blow up in it. Have you ever seen the old Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
With the Cylon Raiders and that little red eye that goes back and forth. I would call it Cylon Raider mode. That's what it was when my eye would blow up. And my office manager knew that that's when I was like stressed out. But it was like once a month I was in Cylon Raider mode. While I'm in the middle of sleep, just somehow the capillaries or something blow up. Or capillaries, is that like some kind of blood vessel or something?
I think it is. I think you got it right.
Sounds legit. So I had that so constantly during my agency run, that Cylon Raider mode. My biggest burnout hit happened shortly after Burn Your Portfolio got published. And I look back at that time now, I'm like, what the freak was I doing? This is what I think. I was running my agency. So that was number one, which was we were doing multi-seven figure revenue. So I think we had 15, 16 employees at the time. So I'm running that. I started another design business with two partners and we had designers in Peru and I was traveling to Peru a couple times to do training and stuff, to do kind of lower cost design, more turnkey, lower cost design, templated style design services. So I had that going on. We built my new agency studio. So I bought that in 2011. We built it out during 2011, moved in at the beginning of 2012. And Burn Your Portfolio, I got my publishing deal. And so I was finishing writing that and getting ready for press, which it got published in 2013. So in that window of a couple years, I had all those things going on. And I look back on it and I'm like, what in the freak was I doing? Like, why was I doing so much stuff? And it's no wonder that at the end of it, it was like just exhaustion, emotional, mental exhaustion, which ended up kind of leading me toward selling my agency. It made me sit back and say, what am I doing? What do I want out of life? Where do I want this agency to go? What's next for me? So that was a big burnout moment in my life. And it was self-inflicted as I look back on it. What about you? You have any burnout phases that were distinct in your career?
Yeah, I do. And I think one that comes to mind is, I think, the main one for me, which was no surprise during the pandemic. You know, at the time, I didn't think it was pandemic induced, but I think it certainly didn't help. Like it, I think a number of things came to a head. And basically, with all those external stresses that were happening in work or in life, in society, you know, in your friend circles and all of it, you know, in my business, I was probably about 8 or 9 years into the business. So I've been doing it a long time and had seen, you know, I've been fortunate enough to see some good success in the pursuits that I had. There were a number of pursuits that didn't quite go anywhere, but that's kind of the nature of entrepreneurship. But a few of them like really kind of popped off. And so I was in a fortunate position to enjoy that. And so that was with, you know, with courses, with services, you know, with the web design business. And I was kind of doing the course thing and the course launch thing and like the regular launches with discounts and promos and, you know, webinars and joint ventures. And so doing all that. And I did that for a number of years to basically diminishing success. So big was great, not as good, less good, less good. And I kind of got myself stuck in the feeling that this, like, I wasn't allowing myself to look outside of that. And so I kept doing the same thing over and over again, hoping that it would be different this next time. And with everything happening outside, I started to feel like almost purposeless. And I was like, I'm doing all this hard work and I've seen a lot of success so far. Why isn't this working? And so it started to like kind of eat away at me. And I started to like almost avoid the idea of going down to the studio and start working. I used to love it. I used to say like, man, I love Mondays because like, I just love getting back to work and doing work. I love it. And I do. Yeah. But then there was something happened where I actually was like, I don't love Mondays. I don't love this. And I'm not looking forward to this. And is what I'm doing, Matt? Like, I was willing to throw it away and like go work just like at the oil rigs or just like whatever Joe job I can get. Like, I was just like, this needs to stop or I need to do something different. And so a number of things, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, how do you tackle and battle and mitigate that situation so you don't burn it all down. Yeah. But that for me was a big part. And I've, you know, thankfully I've come out of that and seen some new opportunities come my way. But that was a big one for me.
Yeah. It's a good one. So you mentioned in that you had diminishing success. Mm-hmm. How much do you think that contributed to you feeling burned out? So you're putting in all this effort and the success wasn't there. Did that make you feel burned out? Is that one of the things? If it would have been successful, do you think you would have hit the wall like you did?
It's a great question. And if I'm going back and I would have done like a launch and like something again popped off, it would be like adding fuel to the tank. And I'd go, oh, all right. Because you know, something's working here. And I think it would have given me the ability to relax, because I think the emotional stress of not being able to like make money and the money that you need and expect, that really basically it's like it pulls out the oxygen and you're kind of running on, you know, it pulls the plug and you're running on fumes. Mixed metaphors here, but you get the idea. And so I see like what you put in, what you get out. I was putting a lot in and not getting a lot out, and it seemed like too much effort for low yield.
Yeah.
And it started to really contribute to that burnout.
Yeah. This is a great little segue to my first point in this. I went in my state of burnout and post selling my agency, I was going to a therapist to deal with some of the PTSD that I was having. And I've talked about that on other podcasts and things. I think I probably mentioned it in the beginning of Two Pixels Off, those early episodes. But I went to this therapist and he taught me this principle of investment yield, that when we make an investment on something, it should yield a return for us. And if it doesn't, then it's a bad investment. And when you take that kind of concept and you consider your time and energy as the thing you're investing, the thing you're putting into something, and when the yield does not give you a return, it's so demoralizing. You look at it and say, man, that was a bad investment. That was a bad investment. And in creative services, what you're putting in is like your effort, your money, your time, the love and passion that you have for the thing that you're doing. And what you get out needs to be money and awards and growth and recognition, the scaling, that excitement of it, the popping off, like you said, Brad, of the thing, it hits and it's working. That's what needs to come. And if it doesn't, it's so easy to get burned out. And I think a lot of that happens where we put that effort in, we don't get the results, so we start feeling demoralized. The happiness factor, this is what my therapist taught me, is when it's balanced, when we're putting in a certain amount of investment and we're getting a balanced even yield back. We will be unhappy if we're putting in a huge amount of investment and we're getting a little yield back. We're going to be stressed and burned out in that situation. You're putting that effort in, you're not getting any results out or not enough results. There's an interesting thing that happens too, that if the yield is bigger than the investment, it can temporarily stunt our drive to progress. Like, let's say you're putting in just a little morsel of effort and you're getting this huge return. And most people are going to say, oh, that's the dream. That's the greatest thing. But what happens in that situation is you kind of kick back a little and you don't have the drive and push. And you're like, I'm just going to ride this gravy train for a while. And then all of a sudden the gravy train stops and you don't have any foundation for the next thing that's going to happen for you. And so it can stunt our drive. So I don't love those times either. Everybody wants a good yield, but I think those times are risky because you sit on your laurels. I see it a lot with creative entrepreneurs where they have 10 clients, tons of revenue. And what's the first thing they stop doing when they're busy building projects? Brad, what's the first thing they stop?
They stop marketing. Stop closing deals.
They stop marketing. They stop selling. They stop because there's no panic mode. The yield is so big that they're just like enjoying life. I got the clients. I got the projects. It's all good. And then what happens when the projects are done? They have nothing left. So there's a risk in either situation. If the investment is too big for the yield, you get burned out. If the investment is small and the yield is big, it temporarily stunts your drive and can be damaging to your business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like that hunger of something about being hungry, figuratively and literally, that gives you that something, that je ne sais quoi. Mm-hmm. To get sustenance. And if you're full and satisfied or satiated or overfed, dare I say, kind of, let's say you have a huge yield and you got an abundance and you closed a huge deal or whatever, you've overfed yourself and you're not kind of approaching that properly, then basically it kills the drive. It kills that lion, you know, so to speak, where you're like, I don't know, like I'm kind of over full right now and I don't need to do anything because I'm good. I got more than enough.
Yeah.
Whereas the person who's hungry, like they'll do a lot in order to get that sustenance. And so it's like balancing it's almost like when you fast, you know, fasting is a big trend nowadays, but fasting has been around for time immemorium. It's like when you fast, you actually partake consciously in hunger for the betterment of your mind and your body.
Yeah.
And you obviously eat and you balance what you input, but you almost, you make it hard. You do a hard thing. So it's like you want that big yield, but you also want to somehow balance that, you know, and replicate that hunger to keep investing and going after it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of that hit.
No, it does. By the way, man, I'm the worst faster ever. I get hangry so fast. Like I'm the worst. I'm the worst faster of all time, I think. It's the worst.
You know what? It's hard to do. I find for me, I do okay with it, but there's a time where it switches and it's like, nobody's better off for me being hungry right now.
Yeah. Okay. This is a total side note, but I know you were a wrestler. We talked about that. Did you wrestle at a lower weight than what your normal weight was? Like what weight class did you wrestle? Did you have to cut weight? Cause all my wrestling buddies were like sauna suits and stuff and just trying to sweat out all their water. Was that your situation?
I tended to get put in I didn't have that strategy cause I wasn't old enough to know, you know, I was like high school and younger. Yeah. Right. And so I didn't know, but I also knew when you do weigh-ins, I was like, I don't want to wrestle against heavier guys. Like that's going to put me at a disadvantage. So I knew it was like, okay, how do I lighten up a little bit? And fight smaller guys. But I tended to just get put in with heavier guys. You know, I think it was based on also skill level for me. I was okay at wrestling, enough for them to put me up against guys that were towering over me, which always was fun.
Yeah. So funny. Yeah. That's a whole nother thing. That fasting, cutting weight, sauna suits and all that, man, the wrestlers, boxers, UFC, that is some rigorous training.
That's a beast. Yeah.
Okay. So let's summarize the end of this little investment yield strategy of just understanding that the goal is balance. Like when your investment and yield are in harmony, you have the right, a proportional amount of gain coming back to you for a proportional amount of effort. It keeps your drive up and it keeps you from burning out. So I like the balanced yield. I've been in a balanced yield for the last like 5 years or so since I've been doing this kind of educational side of my career, mentoring and creating content and things. It's been really balanced. Like it's not multi-seven figure like what I did at my agency, which took a ton of investment but yielded a ton back. Mm-hmm. It's the right balance of I gotta still grind on this. I gotta still be making the content. We're here recording another podcast episode. I gotta be cranking this stuff to keep the yield coming where it was on the progress and gain. So it's been really balanced. And consequently, I haven't been burned out on this. And I've been doing it for 5 years. And I have not gotten burned out yet on what I'm doing. And I don't feel like I'm coming up to some big burnout. It's really quite balanced and I'm happy.
That's awesome. That's the goal to have that.
That's the goal. Yeah. okay, let me rephrase it. I'm happy in my career. I mean, it's not like I don't have problems in other aspects of my life.
For sure.
But yeah, my career phase, the investment and yield are balanced and it does generate improved happiness.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another topic relating to burnout. And this one also came from my therapist. He's so good at this kind of stuff. I think he just had me pegged as this driven overachiever, was trying to get me to dial it back and realize, mm-hmm. Mike, if the yield's not there, then don't put in so much investment. That was the lesson of that first one. He also talked to me about this. He talked to me about the bored zone, the effective zone, and the stressed zone. And this is based on how much effort we're putting in as well. If you're low achievement and you have a small vision and you have low ambition and low risk, you're not taking risks, that's a boring place to be. And a lot of people get bored doing that. You see this inside of careers, people who are going to their 9-to-5 and there's nothing wrong with it, but there are a lot of bored people out there going to their 9-to-5 every day and they just don't feel that career spark that is like, that generates motivation and stuff. They're just going through the motions being a non-player character inside of this matrix world that we all live in. So that's not the place that I wanna be. Now, the unhappy place also is the stressed zone. And this is super high achievement. You're getting the accolades and winning big deals and you have super high expectations for yourself. You're taking high risks. That zone is stressed too. Mm. That's a stressed out zone. And it's less effective than what we call the middle zone, which is the effective zone. And this is just steady progress, incremental improvements, organized goals. You're self-competitive. You're not competitive with people outside of you. You're looking at your progress this year versus last year. You're not looking at Joe's progress with his business and comparing yourself to them. This is the effective zone. And the happiness is in the effective zone. Now, during my agency years, I spent most of my time in the stressed zone. That's where I was. I was like going gung-ho trying to build this agency and make the best it could be. Now, after I sold my agency, I found myself oftentimes in the bored zone. I was like, I didn't have control over running the entire agency. I had to navigate partner relationships, and I was a minority partner with two majority partners and another minority partner who had the same equity as I did. And I found myself in the bored zone, and I found myself unhappy in that situation as well. I think the goal for me is like right on the cusp of the effective zone, almost to the stressed zone. This is where I feel the happiest, where I'm pushing and grinding, but I'm not in that overzealous, you know, staying up till 3 a.m. to work on my pet project stuff. I'm in that balanced state, but I'm in that effective zone and just on the other side of the stressed zone. Have you seen some of this in your life, Brad? How does this apply to you?
Yeah. If I'm using this particular scale, you know, from bored, effective to stressed, I can almost overlay this on my pre-freelancing. I'm wondering here how I can overlay this here. So basically, I worked at a studio, at a creative studio as an employee. This was many, many years ago at the very beginning of my career for 1 year. But I was freelancing in tandem because I just had clients and it just kept coming. And so it got to the point where I was bored in the work that I was doing. Granted, it was a great job, but I was like, I'm called to something more than this. Mm-hmm. And I realized like being in that zone, I just felt like, I'm outgrowing this and I need to do something bigger for me.
Yeah.
And I felt called to that. So I went full-time freelancing. And so that gave me the capacity to really leap into that effective zone where I had some clear, you know, high ambition and big vision and a lot ahead of me that I needed to tackle. But, you know, so there was a lot of stress, but the right amount of stress, like growth stress, you know, when you're, when you're lifting weights or something and you do enough to like, not totally to muscle failure, but close, where you're tearing muscle and growing, you know, versus atrophy. And so I was, you know, high ambition, you know, wanting to achieve, and I had a lot ahead of me, and it was really exciting and a lot of purpose. But then fast forward. So that kind of, that was a long effective zone, like a really long, actually many, many years with very minimal downturn. And so I was really grateful for that. But so I was really taken aback and surprised when like 8-9 years later, I hit that stressed zone. And so when I'm looking at, say, super high achievement or accolades, big deals, high expectations, it for me was less about that and more about a low yield on me focusing on the wrong things and not creating new opportunities, almost milking old opportunities that came years before, but I'd not allowing myself to create new inroads for more opportunities. And so that's when I started to get really burnt out, feeling like, what am I doing? What's the point of this? I'm not getting a lot of yield. It's not giving me enough return on my investment of time and energy. And that's when the burnout happened for me. So that's kind of that arc.
Yeah. Where do you feel you are now in this bored, effective, stressed zone? Where's your line in that scale?
Probably where your line is on that, when you put your line on that graph right before that stressed zone. When I look at my list, you know, I'm very organized. Yeah. I mean, as organized as I can possibly be, I think. I'm like, I'm juggling a lot of things. There's a lot happening. But I can do it and I like it and it's fun. Yeah. And I've always got something to work on. And I get to pull back a bit sometimes, reflect and go, what, don't get too busy in the minutia here. What really is going to move the needle here? And what really matters? You know, don't worry about that graphic or if it's literally 2 pixels off. I do that to myself all the time. Like step back and go, does that really matter? Or can you get, you know, someone to do that for you? And you focus on that part. So that's where I am, where I'm, you know, stress is there. I'm really protective of my downtime and my weekends and my evenings and family time. But when I get back at it, like pile it on, let's go. That's kind of where I'm
at. When I send you an email and say, Brad, pick here 5 times that we could record, pick a time where you can give 2 hours and we'll record 2 sessions. Do you feel anxious when that comes? Or do you look at it and say, oh, okay, good. I'm going to find time in my calendar for that.
I feel super depressed and unhappy. And
you do. You're like, gosh, dang it. I got to go talk to Mike again. This sucks. My life sucks. I'm in the stress zone and my yield sucks.
The yield is zero. The investment is overflowing. I'm in the red zone, tipping off the scales.
It's the worst.
It's hilarious. Jokes aside, no, I am more than happy to do it for a couple of reasons. I love doing these things for a number of reasons. I work by myself in my studio. Like, I don't have any colleagues here. When I get to talk to people who do things that I do, or, you know, people like me in the business sense, like, I love it. It's like a great outlet. And so I can really kind of go for it. So that is a nice benefit, but also it creates opportunities. I don't know what it is. I'm investing in something right now, and investing in our dynamic, our relationship. Yeah. I'm investing in the relationship of people who listen to us and who spend time listening to me. I realize that right now, though I'm talking to a literal reflective piece of glass, there's actually a lot of people right now listening. I can almost visualize, you know, a couple hundred people, or maybe at some point, like a couple thousand, or however it works out. And I go, that's like really cool. And that affects people and that comes around. And I've seen that happen. I've done this long enough to know what you're doing right now. You might not know what you're investing in really, but you're investing in areas that are going to yield something and it's worth doing. So that's another really big benefit for me. And in terms of time management for me, like like I said, I'm protective of my schedule and I'm super regimented in what I do and do not. And I have pockets in my blocks of the week where I go, not a chance. If somebody somehow slips through the cracks and gets a meeting booked on a day that's like a no-go, I'll fully cancel it and just tell them, hey, sorry, that's off limit day for me. Could you reschedule? I don't even apologize. I go so not Canadian, and I say, I canceled your meeting. That's off limits. Pick a new one, please.
You know
what's
not Canadian? You say you don't apologize, but in your phrase, you said, I'll just tell them I'm sorry. That's an out-of-pocket zone for me. I need to reschedule. You apologize without even realizing that you apologize.
I did. So true.
That's Canadian.
That is true. You know what I got to say? You called me out on that, and that's so funny. I'm gonna mention an Americanism that I really appreciated.
Okay, what is that?
Coming from a Canadian, I actually talked to my wife about this the other day. This is off topic for a second. We'll come right back on it.
Is your wife American or is she Canadian?
She's Canadian too. Yeah.
Yeah, she's.
Yeah, okay. So Canadians, for anyone listening who's not Canadian, like we're like a, and this is my words, we're like a hybrid between British people and United States Americans.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Because, I mean, that's like what it is. So we've got British sensibilities, you know, let's call it a politeness factor. And again, I'm not trying to say Americans aren't polite, but.
Man, you can say whatever you want, dude.
I know. I'm talking to an American and I'm like, so sorry, let me say something that might paint you in a certain way. Here's what I'm trying to say. I'll try and be straight out with it. Canadians
be
have
American. And give it to me right in the
give
jugular.
Give it to you straight. Yeah. I'll punch you right in the throat with this one. Canadians tend to be have British sensibilities with their politeness, but that also means they say one thing but mean another. So the politeness isn't always just, we're just like pushovers and polite. We might say, oh, I'm sorry, blah, 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 blah. But really we're saying like, what a dink, you know? So you don't say it to your face. But then there's also, we're right there. We're in the Americas. We're right north of the United States. And our culture is very similar. If I took you and popped you somewhere in a city here in Canada, you probably wouldn't know that you were in Canada unless you saw a Canadian flag or something or a chain store that you don't recognize. It's pretty much similar, you know, lots of nuances that are different. So, but when it comes to the people, there are differences in that I try to not hurt somebody's feelings. I want to say something, but I'll try and find a roundabout way to get them to figure it out. Whereas I noticed, and my brother-in-law is American too, so I can fact check this and it's true.
Okay.
You did this in an office hours.
With your qualitative research of one person.
In my chart, and I saw, check, it was 100% of Americans do this.
100% of the Americans that you surveyed.
The two-person sample size. This. I know, this is so silly. But it was something that I noticed. And I find you to be particularly nice and polite and accommodating. So when you did this, I actually really liked it. So you joined me on an office hours in my community, the Creative Crew, not too long ago here.
Yeah.
And a gentleman was there and he was giving us his story and his struggle in that moment. And I recognized him because he'd come to office hours for many months, you know, maybe even a couple of years. You know, he's been on off coming to office hours. And you also knew him because he's in your community as well. And so we're all familiar here. Yeah. I heard him mentioning something and he was kind of beating around the bush. My head was going, I wish I could tell him that it seems like he doesn't have any get up and go and he's not doing something. He's just theorizing a lot and he's in a holding pattern. How do I say this? And then you jump in and go, hey, what's your question? Okay, can I tell you something? You've been dancing around this for years. It's time for you to get up off the pot and do something about it. And I was like, so it gave me the permission to jump in and attack with kindness and say, okay, let's make this happen then.
Now, in full disclosure, I've known him for I've done one-on-one coaching with him on and off for years. And so I've known him for years. And the irony of that, so I have a really, really good relationship with him already. So I wasn't afraid to kind of call him out on it.
Yeah.
But the irony is that our initial original coaching like 3 years ago related to the same kind of thing that he's trying to solve now. And I was like, it's time, man. It's time. Launch. That's where it was. I usually don't go that direct unless I'm really entrenched with the with the person, but yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know how I got on that.
It's an American way. Yeah.
But I appreciate that. Sure. I feel like more people could benefit from with kindness and love being to the point. And I know I could benefit from that a lot. You know, there's a lot of like tiptoeing around, beating around the bush because you want to avoid conflict. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings when really what they need is a, tell me like it is. Yeah. Like, hey, I mean this with all respect and love, but like, it's time for you to do something about this.
You know what? I did say that when I delivered my statement to him. I was like, I'm going to say this to you because you know I love you already. You already know that. Here it is. And then I told him the thing. So delivering it with that kindness or with real intention and real care for the person, it does make a humongous difference.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to say that either. Don't be afraid to say that. I think that that's a miss that we have, which is better in Canada with the politeness. It's okay to say, hey, man, I really love you. I love doing this podcast with you, Brad. But man, the hockey metaphors have just got to stop. It's too much. I'm okay saying that, but you deliver it with that sugar-coated love. And then, but I do like the hockey metaphors. You can keep them going. But don't talk about the freaking boots anymore. The boots, your wife's boots that you love so much.
I know. We've been looking for more boots and I won't tell you about that. We have a boot thing, I guess. Oh my gosh.
No, man, okay, you love the boots. You love the boots.
A good pair of boots.
Okay. Good. That was a good little tangent about that. I think that there's a lot in there to realize. I think that there's somewhere in between the super directness and delivering something, delivering critique and delivering feedback to a client and telling a client what's wrong with their business, what their real problem is, delivering it with kindness like a Canadian, but the directness of a big city American. I think that there's somewhere in that you find that balance and do it that way. So anyway, okay, good stuff. Going back to this idea of business and burnout, I have this one pet peeve, and let's talk about some things that are how do we conquer this thing? This work-life balance thing, I hate this so much when people say, oh, work-life balance. And the reference to it for me, everywhere that I hear this is work-life balance. So work is one part of my life and the whole rest of my life, my family and my hobbies and my everything else is the other part. And I have these two parts of my life. This is how I hear work-life balance. And you're supposed to have a balanced effort into your work stuff and into your life stuff. I hate that because I believe that it's really this way. I believe that life is the big circle. And inside of life, you have your hobbies, your recreation, your relationships, your family, whatever things. And work is one of these things inside of your life circle. Mm-hmm. I think that that's obvious when you see it in a chart. I have a chart on the video version of this podcast. But you have this idea where all those things are inside of your life. Now, the work-life balance thing for me does not have the work component be a small part of what's inside my life component. Mm-hmm. For me, work is a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. And if I am not able to work, I start getting the freaking heebie-jeebies. I get the anger. I get frustrated. You mentioned this at the start of this podcast, Brad, of I love Monday morning. I love Monday morning because I get back in the seat and I can grind on my stuff. You're built that way where if work was small for you inside of your life circle, you'd be frustrated. You know my favorite day to work? It's Saturday. I freaking love working on Saturday because I'm not getting any emails. I'm not getting messages from my community. I'm not having to wrangle anything other than what I want to be creating yeah. on my Saturday. So it's just this such a personal time for me with no distractions, but it makes my Saturday. And I don't work the whole day, but and I still go to In-N-Out Burger on Saturdays to get my burger. I go and do my little traditions.
Yeah.
But if I wasn't able to work on my Saturdays, I would feel squirrely, man. I would feel a little frustrated. So I get out of balance. My soul gets out of balance if I'm not able to work. Not everybody's built that way, but that's how I'm built. So when I hear work-life balance, my work circle has to be pretty big inside of my life circle, or I'm out of balance. How are you wired, Brad?
That's so cool. We all just accept the work-life balance mantra as, you know, normal. And, you know, so many people accept that and you don't even question it. But so I've appreciated yeah. it when I started to hear people question it. I've heard people say, you know, it's not work-life balance, it's work-life counterbalance. And then I was like, I don't know who said that, but I was like, that one to me doesn't make sense because it's, I don't know. You're like, it's the same thing. I'm looking at a, you know, yeah. a fulcrum and a, you know, a teeter totter and you're like counterbalance. Yeah. Just, I don't know. So that one to me was silly. But yeah. when I started to see this more integrated, holistic version of work is such a, like a significant part of your life. Like you work for so much of it and work is yeah. necessary because work provides you with purpose. But more importantly, actually, you don't have to get purpose from work. Like the point of it is to make money to live, to feed the family, to be able to buy necessities. Like that's the point. You know, it's extra that it gives you purpose and joy and that you like it. Those are extra details. Mm-hmm. So it is such a significant part. So when I started to see it like this chart or this almost like big cell of life, you know, this big circle. And inside that cell, or like little cells or bubbles. So, you know, within that, you know, there's hobbies, mm-hmm. recreation, relationships, work, you know, for other people that might have different ones or extra ones. And when I see that, I actually realize that makes a lot of sense. And so what I will add to it is, yes, I agree with your idea of what, how work is really, it's intertwined into life because mm-hmm. it's, you can't just separate it and say, well, I balance it with my life over here and my work mm-hmm. life is over here. I think that is not the right mentality. Integrating it, yes. But what I think is really important for me, and maybe others can see this as well, is turning it off. So, mm-hmm. and that's where probably the balance gets confused. You think it's separate from life. It's not. Like I work from home. I've been working from home for like 11, 12 years. I love mm-hmm. it. I don't prefer working around people because I just get distracted and I don't get anything done. And I like being isolated and working and getting it done. But I have to turn it off. So when if I don't, it's really easy to take the phone and look at the notification and do the email. And then you're thinking about, oh no, I got to remember to do that for so-and-so on Monday. And then you're doing to-dos and you're doing this. And then you're on Instagram checking notifications. You're saving that for later. Ooh, that's a good idea. And then it doesn't stop. And that to me needs to be compartmentalized. And so what I do is when I'm working, I'm 100% all in and I'm, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I'm doing. And when I'm not, I do my absolute best to eliminate distractions. And now I'm not perfect at it by any stretch of the imagination. Like I try to turn off all my notifications on my phone and don't let anything come through so I don't even get distracted. And sometimes I do, you know, look at the email and I think about that and make a to-do. And it, so I try to avoid that as much as possible. But also sometimes that happens and that's okay. Oh my gosh, this is an emergency. I need to deal with it. Or I'm here, I'm working real hard. Like for example, if my wife walked in right now, which I hope she doesn't, and says, and I mean this by, if she walked in and said, there's an emergency, you need to come now. I would say, yeah. sorry, Mike, I gotta go. And then
yeah.
I'd be off.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go, sorry, this is work time. Emergencies can wait. Yeah. Like it's all integrated. And if I have to switch between one or the other, totally fine. Sometimes I'll work late. Sometimes I'll work on a weekend. Other times I won't work Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday because I don't want to. And I'm going mm-hmm. on a long weekend. So mm-hmm. when it's really integrated for me, that that is more healthy. And then being able to check in and check out and having them in their compartments, but know that it is such a big part of your life. That's how I approach it too.
Yeah. That's how I approach it too. And I think it's different for every single person. The size of the work cell inside of your life molecule.
Yeah.
The molecule is smaller than a cell, Brad. What's a,
you know,
give me a science lesson. What's bigger? The atom. I know atoms are really small, right? So the work atom inside of the larger molecule. Brad's looking this up right now. I can see him typing as we speak.
You think I'm typing, but I'm really just accessing the database that is my brain.
That's
what I am doing.
That's what it is.
Not ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. What's bigger, the atom or the molecule or the cell? Anyway, for me, it's big. The work component is big and I'm out of balance if I don't have it. I'm also out of balance if I don't have some hobby time. I play guitar and I love that. And I love my guitar pedals. I mentioned that. That's my hockey version. But I mentioned it. I love that. And if I don't get to have that be part of my life, I start to feel out of whack. I feel out of balance. And so that's a component of this. We all have to understand how big are these things inside of us. The size of your work thing is different for you versus me. The size of your hobby thing is different for you versus me. The size of relationships, like some people are out there working and family, they're introverts and they're not married. They don't have kids. There's not anything going on in relationships and they're fine with it. So relationships is this very, very small atom inside of this molecule of life. It's a very small atom for them. But for me, it's pretty sizable.
I want to fact check you now that I access my database.
What do you got?
My own.
What do you got?
So the cell is life. These circles within the cells, hobbies, work, relationships are molecules, which are groups of atoms. So the atom might be the individual person, an individual project, an email you need to send within your work molecule. And then life is the cell. So that's what that is. Just I FYI.
I like it. This is, you know what? Just shout out to 2 Pixels Off because here you're going to learn how to run a business. You're going to have great stories about boots in Canada and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you're going to learn science.
You're going to learn science.
It's so packed. It's so packed with value.
Yeah. 2 Pixels, 2 Molecules Off. 2 atoms Ooh, off. I mean, can you imagine if we're both named Adam? We should have both been called Adam and we could have been 2 atoms off.
It's such a miss. I don't know, maybe that's such a miss.
What do you got for me, Mike? What's next?
Next on this one. Okay, so if we were talking about burnout and your business, this was a realization that I had that I tell people a lot when they come to me and say, man, Mike, I am just fried. I'm just fried. And burned out. And for me, I never let myself feel it. And I never had somebody tell me that I had permission to be burned out. So I just kept grinding. And I felt bad when I would do that. I have somebody who I do one-on-one coaching with. He's also in my community. And he messaged me on like Saturday night. And he was like, Mike, I totally blew off the day. I just sat around and watched Netflix the whole day and I feel awful. And my response to him was, man, let yourself off the hook. It's number one. I think it was a holiday in his country and he was blowing it off. And I was like, let yourself off the hook. It's a holiday. It's okay to use it and do whatever the freak you want. And even if it wasn't a holiday, you can still do whatever the heck you want because one day in the whole schema of your entire life to sit there and be burned out and watch Netflix is no big deal. And you know what else? 1 year of being burned out and not pushing and not being in the stressed zone and just chilling in your career efforts, that's no big deal either. Because in the schema of your life, you have growing up age 0 to 20, let's say. And then in your 20s to 20 to 30, a lot of people are finishing school. They're having their first career jobs. They're starting that thing. Yeah. And that's the early career. You're now 30 years in and you haven't even really gotten started yet. And then your mid-career, kind of the sweet spot is that age 30 to 40 when things start really picking up momentum. You start having some expertise. You're having so much more value to contribute. There's a 10-year span. Inside of 10 years, what do we have? 3,650 days, right? 3,650 yeah. days in a 10-year period. That is like one day or 10 days or 30 days is such a, of being burned out and just chilling has no impact on the entire scope of your career time. Then you got your 40s to 50s, 50 to 60s, 60s to 70s. Most of the people listening to this are probably going to live into the 100 range. Most of the people, you can expect that based on changes in science. Brad is, you know, a scientist and helping with that everywhere that he can. You're going to live longer because of Brad's expertise that he's bringing to the science world with molecules yeah. and whatnot.
Well, but and you also mentioned there's 3,650 days in 10 years, which of course you're wrong. Because no, you didn't account for the wrong 2 to 3 leap years. So what about those two extra bonus days?
So let's take 365 days and let's times it by 100 years. I'm getting out a calculator for this one so that Brad doesn't come at me all scientific.
Yeah.
36,500 days. 36,500 days. So if you have a holiday or a Saturday when you're just kind of burned out and you're like, I don't really want to read that business book today. I don't feel like it. Then don't read it. Just chill. Freaking yeah. stream Netflix, man. Do whatever you want because in the grand scheme of things, it does not matter. So I think my message on this one is let yourself off the hook when you feel a little burned out. It's okay to yeah. take your foot off the gas a little and realize the burnout's not going to last forever. Brad, how long when you got burned out where you're talking about the story at the beginning, how long did that last for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it lasted about, if I'm being generous, I'd say about 6 months. And okay. so to me, that felt like forever because I had work, like bills were getting yeah. paid. Granted, it wasn't as much as I'd been making previously or during certain peaks, but like bills were getting paid. I had passive income streams. Like I was still getting clients, but the burnout was real and it was about 6 months. And when you yeah. mentioned, you know, giving some space or stepping back, taking your foot off the gas, my wife gave me a certain style of that same advice, which was like, do something like carve out some time to like do something that you want to do or like try something different or experiment with a new idea or build a new thing, something that's exciting for you that doesn't matter if it has any yield or not, like remove all expectations from it, like and do a yeah. thing that just kind of maybe relieves that pressure. And so that's what yeah. I did while working as well and doing other things, but I carved time out and focused yeah. on that thing. And I think it really kind of relieved that pressure. And then other opportunities came. Like a wave, it came back and I rode the wave out. That's like kind of how yeah. that worked.
So 6 months yeah. times, so you're talking about 180 days. And if you look at this over the course of your entire life, 36,500 days minus 180, all of a sudden you have 36,320 days in the rest of your life. That there is no substantial difference between having 36,500 days and 36,320 days to try and expand your career, work on whatever. It's okay to be freaking burned out for 180 yeah. days if that's what happens. I had a similar thing, and it's interesting that you said 6 months because mine was similar time. After my buyout ended with my agency, I went home. I was done. I left the agency, went home, and I was like, okay, what do I do now? And I literally sat in my hot tub every day for like 4 hours and didn't do much for about 2 months. And then I started kind of scoping out this room in my basement thinking, all right, if I move this stuff out of there, then I could make a little office down here for myself. And so then I start shopping for furniture. And then I start getting, this is in like 3 or 4 months later, then I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to start writing some blog articles. And one of the blog articles was about how to price work, my pricing methodology. And that article just kept getting longer and longer and longer. And then I was like, this isn't an article, this is a book. And then I got so passionate about writing what became The Psychology of Graphic Design Pricing. I was sitting out on my back porch, writing out in the sun. It was so great. Yeah. Of a time, I got all this wave of just massive motivation, but it came about 4 or 5 months after I left my agency in just complete exhaustion. I felt like when I left the agency, I felt like I just fell over the finish line of my marathon. And I was like, oh, hey, I'm exhausted. Mm. But it didn't last forever. All of a sudden, I find myself writing another book a few months later. And then that has turned into what I'm doing now, which is just, and I haven't ever gotten burned out in this yet. I'm still just grinding and loving what I do so much. So it is realistic to say that these moments of burnout don't last.
Yeah.
They could last 3 months, 6 months, something like that. But most humans have enough drive in them that 3 months, 6 months later, they're going to be like, I'm kind of sick of playing Call of Duty. I'm going to go, I always wanted to sculpt the presidents in, out of clay, or they have some kind of pet project that they always wanted to do. People pick it up. It doesn't have to be work, like paid work career. It can be something. I always wanted to learn how to be a good magician. And they'll pick that up, that it can be a hobby related thing that becomes the driver. But most people don't stay burned out longer than a 3 month, 6 month, or even a year. You could have a year of total burnout and you're still barely scratching the surface on the 36,500 days that you have in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
So let yourself off the hook. That's the topic here. Okay, I have one little exercise to share.
Okay, and
that'll be the last thing that I have to share, unless you have another strategy you want to contribute, Brad, to this. But I have people, and I started doing this for myself so that I could organize my stuff. I recommend that people make two lists. One list. Did you see those balloons just fly over the screen? So funny.
Just having a confetti party over there.
Yeah. I don't know how I made that happen. I was like giving the peace sign to the camera and all of a sudden balloons
are flying everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, look. Anyway. All right. I'm trying to make it happen again. I think I got some sparkles going on there or something. Anyway, you make two lists of what you want to do. One list is the someday list, and the other list is the now list. Let me give you something, Brad. What was on my someday list? When you and I started doing some collaborations and stuff last year, it was like last fall or end of summer where I thought, oh, someday I'm going to ask Brad to do a podcast with me because I have a really good synergy with him. We can talk forever. I was like, he'd be a good podcast partner. And I didn't do anything about it because it was on my someday list. Then at the end of last year, when Wix Studio approached me about doing some content and stuff, I was like, oh, here's a thing that I've been kind of rattling around in my brain. And I messaged you about it to see if you wanted to embark on that. And here we are. But it was something on my someday list. So I didn't let it get me all frazzled. I had things on my now list, and anything that isn't for now, I'm going to stick on my someday list. And I recommend that you just have 1, 2, maybe 3 things on your now list. Last year on my now list, I had making my community more Creative Academy. That was my now list. And it was my entire year trying to get that up and running and content and, make the community vibe and brand and all of that stuff. That was the only thing on my now list. And anything else that popped up, like other courses I want to make, other books I want to write, other podcasts I want to do, all those just got dropped on the someday list. Someday, someday, someday. And this can take off some of that pressure that you feel when you're feeling burned out. Yeah. It can make you feel like, you know what? I'm going to do that someday. Someday I'm going to take that. I'll take care of that. But right now I'm going to stay focused on the thing that I want to do. Kicking it down the road on a list can relieve your brain from feeling the anxiety that you're not progressing on it. You're intentionally telling yourself it's going to be someday, not right now.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to close us out on a bit of a quote that I came across, that I think will tie into this nicely. And one thought that I had with this conversation is like, to combat that burnout, you know, this is my thought here. You need to, I think, give yourself some space to back up a bit. A lot of the burnout comes from, you know, that investment with low yield. And so back off on the investment a bit, you know, get off the gas, give yourself some space. And whether that's try a passion project, try a pet project, try a hobby, like give yourself some space to breathe, to heal, whatever it is, you know, maybe go to a counselor, like get some help, do what you need to do to kind of heal yourself. Mike, get some help.
I've been there. I'm going to counseling right now, man. I go see a therapist. So
it's really good. It's good to do that.
Everybody should.
And so everybody should.
Yeah.
Give yourself some space to heal. Also, like lower your expectations of yourself a bit. I know for me, you know, I can have high expectations of myself, and if I don't hit it, I'll be really hard on myself. Sometimes that's good, but if it comes at the cost and it actually isn't a negative effect, sometimes I'll be hard on myself and I'll like, it'll help. Other times if I'm hard on myself, I'm actually damaging myself. Get off of your back, come back a little bit, get off the gas. And I think that that's going to help you. That space, that wave is going to come again where you'll be able to kind of ride off and catch some new opportunities, but ease back a bit. Now, the quote that I wanted to mention before I'll close us out is on the topic that you shared here about making your now list and your someday list. I think getting those things out of your brain is important, making that now list of what's really important right now. And it's probably kind of small, make it small, and then put stuff on that someday list, and that gets it out of your brain. So there's less pressure of feeling like you need to keep doing something that you're not quite ready for. Get it out on a piece of paper, a journal, a Notion board, whatever you're using. Now, the quote is from Seth Godin, and I love Seth Godin's work.
Yeah.
He has an article called it's really small, burned out / burned in. So he says burned in is what we look for in an electronic device. It's working perfectly in the groove. Burned out is what happens if we abuse it. Burn in comes from a practice, a generous, persistent approach that's within our control. Burnout, on the other hand, is often caused by trying to control things we can't possibly control. And as a result, we waste cycles and create patterns of stress, end quote. So that's, to me, we're doing things that we can't control and creating those patterns of stress. And we're going to literally burn our cycles out, that battery. So, you know, ease off, make the now list, make the someday list, get yourself out of that pattern and ride that time out a bit. You have the time. And then you'll find yourself in a bit more of a peaceful place where you are ready to reinvest and to get yield out of that investment.
I love
Mike,
that.
Mike, this was a really cool conversation to have. Yeah, tell me, you got something to say.
I've got a quote.
Let's hear it.
That I made up while you were talking, so you can take some of the credit for this. But you were saying, give yourself some space. Like, meaning, give yourself time to be burned out. Give yourself time to do that, to just take your foot off the gas a little. So give yourself some space, but you also have to give yourself some grace. You have to give yourself some grace and realize it's okay to feel burned out and to not feel guilty about it and to dial back the intensity a little bit. It is okay to do that. So my quote is, relating to burnout, give yourself some space and some grace, and you're going to find a lot more peace in your soul relating to the things that you want to accomplish.
Amen.
You like that one, Brad?
Amen to that, man.
Can I get a hallelujah out there?
You can get a hallelujah and balloons flying left, right, and center on your camera.
More balloons? How do I get the balloons to?
Confetti and all.
Get the balloons to go.
I know. We'll work on that one. But friends, thanks for listening. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed this. Special shout out to also our friends at Wick Studio for helping to facilitate these podcast episodes. Make sure you go to twopixelsoff.com to learn more about the podcast and see the entire library that we've recorded so far. Make sure to give us a review on your favorite podcast app so we can pop into the ears of some new listeners. And we will see you next time.